So Nishant, thank you very much for bringing me to this beautiful place.
My pleasure.
Yeah, we are in the southern corner of India, and you know, surrounded by tropical forest on one side and the blue sea on the other side.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful setting for us to talk a lot about the thing that we started together now almost what, year and a half ago,
two years ago.
So yeah, it's time's gone mind. Very fast. Yeah, so it's let's jump into that. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to know, why are we doing this, Hari?
It's a bit late in the day to ask that question, but yeah. So I think, you know, let's go back to our early conversation, right? So it's very clear that there's a whole, you know, success has sort of traveled across the world, right? There's a whole sort of group of people across the world who've really tasted significant success. In the traditional sense of the term success, right? Mm-hmm. Professional success, financial success, social position, and all of that that comes with what we call success. And it's become equally clear that a significant portion of that group has a challenge. And that challenge that arises out of the success. And that challenge is this, which is a very interesting challenge. And we've discussed this before, which is, I have success, but I haven't got something that I thought success would give me.
Mm.
And so I have this gap and I don't know how to fill this gap, because I know how to get to success, but I don't know how to fill this gap. And so different people define this gap in all kinds of ways. So some people will say, you know, I don't feel contented. Somebody will say, I'm not happy. Somebody will say, you know, somebody very poetic once told me that, you know, I feel I've got a hole in my heart.
Mm.
Which stuck with me as a metaphor for the problem. And I call it the listlessness of success. You know, where you're not enthusiastic for life. You know, success is there. And it has all kinds of manifestations. You feel that you're burnt out. You feel that you don't want to do anything new. You want to keep doing the same old, because somewhere you don't have the enthusiasm to do something new. Sometimes you fall ill. And you don't know why you're falling in.
Mm.
And you go to the doctor and the doctor says you're fine. And you're falling in.
Yeah.
I know all these kind of things are symptoms of a deeper thing, which is what I try to sort of put together under one description of listlessness of success. So what we are trying to do is to solve for that problem. And the reason why we want to solve that problem is nobody is solving that problem. And it's as acute a problem as anything. The other problem is that this is an issue faced by the successful people. And most people think that they've already got success, so why should we try to address them in any manner? They've already got success. Let me go and help people who don't have that success. So they don't have a place to go find that solution. So that is what we are trying to do. We are actually trying to solve for this peculiar problem called listlessness of success, which is deep, real, with very little support to actually solve.
Yeah.
Cross through.
In fact, you know, so I had a similar situation and I was quite surprised that when you articulated it, because back then when I was going through this and I couldn't see that, I couldn't feel that, why is that happening to me? But now when I retrospectively get this clarity, I'm feeling like, yeah, that's exactly what I was going through. So very interesting, Hari, and I'm just wondering, how come you didn't get the same feeling?
Feeling?
Yeah.
No, I think we've kind of discussed this in the past, and you know, it is an interesting point, actually, because in consulting, I'd gone through consulting and, you know, it's a very intense process of consulting. You're either in and moving up or you're out. And so it took me a few years, but fortunately was able to get to that point of success. And therefore, I then had a peer group which had all gone through that same thing and had got to success fairly quickly in life. And I found that most of them have this particular thing that we discussed, listlessness of success in various ways. And it was intriguing to me that I did not seem to have that. In fact, it didn't strike me initially. It took me some time to even strike me that I don't seem to have it. And so then I went back to figuring out, you know, and it took me again time to figure out, why is it that maybe I don't have that? And I realized that it had mainly to do with my childhood. It was a great moment of understanding, you know, and insight. I lived a childhood, which in many ways, when I look back, is unique and little differentiated from what a lot of people go through, especially people who go through this journey of success and come out at the other end. And that was a strange combination in the family that I came from.
Okay.
The one side was a very rooted family, you know, rooted in the Indian thing. You know, like, so for example, things like yoga or Ayurveda or meditation or a certain kind of food or anything which we now have words for, you know, we have names for, were just part of life, as is there in many families. It's a part of life. And so you pick up a lot of things by just sheer osmosis, just by being present in the family, right? So you're hearing it from your grandparents, your parents, and just it's in the air. You pick it up. But that was one side of the nature of the family. The other side of the nature of the family was that it was also an extremely globally oriented or outwardly focused, open to all cultures type family. And you know, I've and one of the interesting examples of manifestations of that was that my grandfather, who happened to be an orphan, had a strange set of circumstances whereby he eventually ended up becoming one of the first people from India to go to Oxford University to study in those days, you know, getting onto a ship, sailing across the seas. There's a very interesting thing, you know, we have in the family. There's a letter he wrote from each of the ports that he went through.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, and he would say, now I am passing through Aden port. And then there's a letter in those days, you know, it posted in Aden. So it would make its way back to India in this corner and so on. So this combination of a very rooted childhood, but also a very open and outwardly oriented childhood, I think gave me two things. One, it gave me a daily life routine and a way of seeing the world, which when I look back now, was unique and still remains unique in the way a lot of people do. So I think that was, then I realized that's the reason that I don't feel quite the same way. But of course, that does not answer the question of therefore what?
Exactly.
Because, you know, it happened to me because it was a set of circumstances. I was there at that time. My life happened to be that way. Mm. But you can't expect everybody to have that same situation, nor is it relevant. And therefore, the question that I had for me was, okay, this is interesting, but is there anything in that we can learn from, I can learn from, and then see whether that then can be used to help people who find themselves without, you know, with that hole in the heart, with that listlessness. And so that was a journey, and that journey took me well over a decade to figure out.
Very interesting. So before I try to go deeper into what did you learn and how can others learn from that, I would like to know that who do you think all of this that you have just explained, that this life routine which I picked up the word, and this aspect of the childhood which is a lot of things which you picked up from there.
Right.
In today's modern era, now that we are focusing globally and trying to take this concept worldwide.
Right.
In your opinion, who should be listening to us? Who will it make sense, this entire knowledge and learning that we're talking about?
Who can learn from this and use it in their daily life to make a difference? I think that's the question you're asking. And that's an interesting question. I think for me, the starting point is clear, that the problem that we are referring to is a problem that arises out of success. So first is that we are talking about a group of people for whom success is in the traditional sense of the term success has already happened.
Okay.
So these are therefore what? They're very accomplished people. They are very usually tend to be innovative, creative type people, very intense people. So you know, these are kind of people who have tasted success and have come to understand and have the self-awareness to understand that they miss something even though they've got success. So that's our classic potential person who can get the benefit of this knowledge. And so, you know, and if you then drill down further from that, saying, okay, such people, who are these people? So, you know, my classic example, right? A successful lawyer in New York City, a banker in Berlin, you know, people, a creative artist who does, you know, for example, a designer in a fashion house in Paris. Extremely intense lifestyle.
Yeah.
Top of the game. But the next collection is what will determine where they exist in the hierarchy. Yes. So I've been talking, we've been talking to people in the French fashion industry, and we've realized that they, for example, are potentially people who could get great value. So it's those kind of people. It's actually quite a wide spectrum of people who fall into this thing of incredibly successful, highly successful, and self-aware enough to know that there is something missing in that success and want to find that missing piece and are not content to not find that. So it's an interesting thing. So a lot of people in the world have sort of, without realizing it, accepted a situation, and that situation is, I can either have success or I can have this joy for life. I can't have both. That's what a lot of people have assumed. But our clients are people, or our potential clients are people who are not ready to accept that. They're saying, I will want to have success and I want to have the joy that life can give me. And is there a way for me to do that? And the beauty of the Indian knowledge on well-being is that that's actually the starting point of that knowledge. The starting point of that knowledge, and that's what I discovered over this long period of my own search, is that that knowledge actually starts with the premise that having both success and joy is a natural state for man.
Okay.
And the reason you don't get there is simply just lack of knowledge of a few things. Avidya, it says not having vidya means knowledge, is simply the point. And our intention is simply to equip you with that knowledge that allows you to then do the things that will get you to the place where both are there. So that's our client, potentially.
Correct.
Those are the people who can, get potential benefit. And they are in all the great cities of the world. I'd imagine they'll be in the top, let's say, 100 cities of the world. So whether you take New York, or you take Tokyo, or you take Shanghai, you take Hong Kong, you take Sao Paulo, they'd sit in all of those places.
So my guess is that all of these people you're talking about, right, these specific people specifically, so these guys have got a lot of solutions around them to take care of this, right?
Right.
Then we have come across multiple people that have been helping them in their journey of success, joy, happiness, all kinds of stuff.
Right.
Wellness journey, health journey. What role do we play in their life specifically?
That's a good question. See, one of the challenges as to why they are not able to find the solution to this problem is that there is nobody actually explicitly trying to solve this problem.
Okay.
There are people solving constituents of this problem. So, there's a health related thing. There are imbalances that, you try. So, for example, there are lots of people trying to solve the problem of sleep.
True.
There are lots of people trying to solve the problem of stress. There are lots of people trying to solve the problem of chronic back pain. And so on and so forth. There are these siloed approaches to all of this. But there's nobody tying all of this together into a thing of saying, the purpose of all of this ultimately is to get me to a place where I have both success and joy. And that some of this detail has to connect together. It has to come together. And that the only way I can get to that larger thing is by having a full view of the whole thing. Where I'm not doing a little bit here, then I'm doing Peloton bike, and then I'm going on an ultra marathon run, and then I'm going to Ladakh to Tibet to meditate, or I'm doing all kinds of stuff that comes to me. The latest new flashy shiny object is not what I'm going to go after. I want to see it all fit together, and I know that I'm very cohesively moving to a clear place. Nobody giving that today. So our role is to provide two or three things. One is to give that clarity and that cohesion.
Okay.
Saying, how does it all fit? Where does therapeutic food fit in with spirituality? They all fit. And so to give them a framework to be able to see all of this in one place in a clear and comprehensive manner is the first thing that we do. The other is that path itself has need for a lot of support from all kinds of knowledge that has to come. So where can I find that knowledge? Who's the best to give me that knowledge? Is the knowledge in the form of a practice? Is the knowledge in the form of an insight? Is the knowledge in the form of products that I can use? Is the knowledge in the form of experiences that I can have when I go away somewhere? I need to know all those things. So one of the things we want to do and are now working on is to not just show the clear and cohesive and comprehensive framework, but make sure that within each aspect of that, we know what we can give to these people, and we spend a lot of time curating the best of that to be able to bring the team. So if it's yoga that you got to do and spirituality and something on food, for each of them, we put in that same amount of effort to know how to curate and give them to you. So the second thing is the power of curating the knowledge and putting it there. So one is to give a frame that allows you to look at the knowledge and say, okay, this is what I want. The other is we then curate from that and then say, okay, not now you know what you want. These are the things that you should actually get. And the third is the how of it, which is that we do all of this in a way that is empathetic to your situation and friendly. So that our mental model of who we are is that we are an empathetic and friend, and to some extent a knowledgeable friend, an enlightened, knowledgeable, empathetic friend to you. That's the role that we have. So that's our role in your life, that when you want to bring the enormous treasures of Indic knowledge to bear for this problem of your listlessness of success and therefore of well-being, we are the place to turn to. We are the people who know, and we are the people who have the empathy to see your situation and help you go on a journey that gets you.
Interesting. And so I have a follow-up question on that. So do we coexist with their existing wellness coaches and professionals and that they're working with them? Or are we saying that so we have a clear cut of existence in their heads? And so because when we are holistic and these guys are all working on their specific problems, so are we tying that also for them?
So there are two ways to see this, right? One is, first you start with the framework and then say, here are the pieces that you got to work on. There are some things that you're already doing. It's possible that some of those things are part of the framework and therefore you're already working on them. So that's fine. That's one way to, and therefore look at all the other things. That's one way.
Yeah.
But a deeper way to think about it is that very often when you say I'm doing something with you know, a coach, a wellness, you know, person and so on and so forth, you are in a particular paradigm. And what's the paradigm? I have a problem.
Yeah.
This person is giving me an intervention, and hopefully with that intervention I will get to a solution, and the solution is that the problem will go.
True.
So there's a problem, intervention, solution, paradigm. We are not talking about that at all. What we are essentially saying is that is an ongoing activity of life. What we want to do for you is to change the state in which you exist, right? So it's not to continually solve your problems, but to get you a state where problems themselves reduce.
Okay.
You know, so to get you to the next level at which you operate your life. So where problems themselves become less, life itself becomes easier, and so on and so forth. So if you are continuously focused only on the problem and its solution, you'll never be able to do that. So in a sense, this exists at some parallel level to all of those things that you're doing. Very often what happens with people is they're trying to solve these problems, and by the time they finish, the next one has come along. Because you're not making a fundamental change to your state.
Yeah.
You're just existing in the same state and trying to just somehow manage this problem and that problem and that problem and that problem. Whereas you need to parallelly think about how you're going to change your state. And as you change your state, one of the consequences is that the number of problems, the intensity of problems themselves will start to reduce. So we are not focused on the problem solving, but what we are focused on will make such a fundamental change that problems themselves will reduce. But that is not the only objective. Getting you to the place of joy is our objective. These are all consequences of that.
Okay.
These are easier to see consequences, but that is where you will really feel the power and the magic when you get to that point of joy.
And so is that our mission?
That is our mission. That's exactly our mission. So what we want to do is, for all the successful people in the world who are extraordinary people who are making the world an enormously different and a wonderful place, we want to make sure that the beauty of life is given back to them. And so therefore, to bring joy and place it in the same level of experience as success, therefore they don't have to make the choice, but to actually have both success and joy is our mission for such people. And that's what we are completely focused on across the world. So focused on that thing that we don't look at anything else, saying successful people across the world, people who are struggling with this problem, we know other people are not supporting, we are there.
And so what's our vision then?
That is our vision.
That's our vision.
So how do you see the vision unfold? And how I see the vision unfold is that we go city after city in the world. And like we've started with New York City now, as you know, in the last 1 year, we've been really focusing on that city. And, you know, we find gradually, you know, the interesting thing I noticed about who are the people, you know, you asked me this question, who are the people who can get the more maximum benefit from this? And the answer to that is not my understanding of that. What I've realized is when we went over the last 1 year, for example, to New York City and started talking about this, I found out a fascinating thing, that such people who have this need, they will find you. It's not that you will find them, they will find you.
Which has happened to us.
Which has happened to us. As you know, it has happened to us, right? Yeah. So we sat, the first time we went, think back to that, right? We were sitting in the middle of Bryant Park on a summer afternoon, and we had just told some people on LinkedIn. And we had, from that day, for 2 weeks continuously, a steady stream of some of the most successful people in New York City come and sit with us across the, you know, and have a coffee or an ice cream or whatever in Bryant Park and have conversations about such stuff. So told me that they will find us. And so the vision is to make ourselves available and accessible in city after city like this.
All the time. Yeah.
And talk about what we bring and allow them to find us. And allow them to find us and then allow us to help them. So that's so we are not chasing. This is a knowledge that has existed for thousands of years. This knowledge does not need validation. But it's a great power in that knowledge. And all we are doing is taking it out there, showcasing it, and waiting for the people who have the both the need and the ability to see the power of this in solving for that need, come to us. That's the wish.
And which is the next city then?
That's an excellent question. I am tempted because there are so many cities we could potentially go to, right? So the city that actually remains in my head as my most... See, New York City has always been in my head the place to start, because in my head, in addition to the fact that it is the greatest city on earth in terms of just income and size and all that, it's also probably in many ways the most open city in the world. You know, people are inherently
welcoming city as well.
Welcoming and open. They're open to looking at, you know, wherever it's coming from in the world. You know, there's a borough in New York called Queens, right, which is considered to be the world's most diverse, because there are people from 180 countries living in that one borough. So inherently they are much more open as a people. So I wanted to start there, and I think we've had a wonderful experience there. But the other city, and there are many other cities like that. London immediately suggests itself. The great cities of the US themselves, you know, whether it's Los Angeles or San Francisco, suggests itself. But the one city that I have my eyes on, which I believe is a city that is potentially crying out for something like this, is Shanghai.
Ah, okay.
I've been there a few times, and in China in general. And I've come to the conclusion that China has seen success at a pace that no other civilization in history has seen at this kind of pace. In a span of 30 years, it's just seen extraordinary success. And one of the things that you notice when you go to China is that this problem that we're talking about is massively amplified there among that successful group, because they've just had the success happen to them in, you know, an extraordinarily fast, you know, in a very limited time. And so I'm hoping one day that fairly soon we'll get to Shanghai. Mm-hmm. Might not be the next city, but I think it's certainly, you know, on the horizon in my head. And we have to, there are challenges, obviously. Language is a challenge. There are multiple challenges. But I truly believe that the power of the knowledge will call out to the people, and we will find a way to reach there. But yeah, could be Shanghai.
And I'm looking forward to that journey. It's been rewarding.